Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. That's Spellbound by Susie and the Banshees. John McKeough of Susie and the Banshees died on this day in 2004. We're about to talk to two very incredible authors. They're going to be appearing here in Baltimore this Saturday from at 1 o'clock at the Enoch Pratt Library on Cathedral Street. It's part of the Women's History Month Literary Festival taking place at Enoch Pratt Library. And this discussion between, there'll be another author and an incredible moderator with this panel coming up. And we are really happy to have with us here to talk about their work and about what this conversation will be about. Lalita Tatamy is with us. She is a New York Times bestselling author, Cane River, Red River, and Citizen's Creek, which is a new novel that we'll be talking a bit about. And LaShonda Catrice Barnett is with us, also just an incredible novelist, going back into a history and bringing things out. I Got Thunder, Black Women Songwriters and Their Craft, Drop the Mic, her work around women and music. And this book is called Jam on the Vine. And they're two very different stories, but in some ways interconnected. And we'll talk about that. And Lalita Tatamy and LaShonda Barnett, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
It's great to have you both. I let me just begin by this, doing it this way, to let our listeners get a sense of some of this. I mean, you both have written these novels, kind of historical fiction, but based on, as most historical fiction is, reality. And you talk about different pieces of this. And Lalita Tatamy, let me start with you and talk for a minute about Citizen's Creek. Because you in all your novels before, I mean, and you're doing it this one again, it's kind of wrestling with this kind of racial fusion and racial conflict, but this time set in the world of Black Indians in Oklahoma. Talk a bit about this. It's a fascinating read, but it's also a fascinating time of our history.
Yeah, I'm drawn to the South. I'm drawn to history and our beginnings, and that past very often, almost always, comes through slavery.
Right.
And in this particular book, I have taken a real man and his granddaughter, and I'm telling the story of their family that lived in the early 1800s through the early 1900s. And I was so, in doing the research for the book, I was so astounded by all of the facts that I did not know. So this protagonist, again, based on a real man, was actually the slave of a Creek Indian chief in Alabama, was removed along with his Creek Indian master along the Trail of Tears, and taken into Indian territory as property, had a great facility for languages and brokered treaties between the U.S. government and the tribe because he could speak both English and Creek dialect, and rose in the tribe to actually become an African Creek chief. And that was so amazing to me in so many ways and exposed so much that I didn't know about that I found it fascinating to write about this story. And then the story continues for the second half of the book with his granddaughter,
Rose,
who went on to create a ranch and to form really an oil dynasty in Oklahoma. So these are very interesting Black folks.
They are, and I'll come back to a bit about that as well. I mean, I just find them because it's real, and it's a reality we don't talk about much. And the other piece that you brought to us, LaShonda Catrice Barnett, in this wonderful book Jam on the Vine, you kind of take this historical piece built around at least Ida B. Wells and Charlotta Bass and bring us these two characters that are just, they speak to America now as well. But talk a bit about that.
Well, I do want to point out that my heroine, Iva Williams, is inspired by Ida B. Wells,
right,
and Charlotta Bass, but it's not, in the case of my novel, it's not that I'm retelling Ida's life at all.
Right.
It's completely fictional. But Carlotta and Ida did inspire Ivo. Jam on the Vine, I consider it a Valentine to the Black press. The Black press has always held significance in my family. I come from a family that reveres Black newspapers. And I decided years ago that if I ever embarked on the grueling but wonderful journey of novel writing, that I would choose to shine a light on the Black press. So definitely, Ivo Williams, my character who launches a Black newspaper in 1918, just months before before Red Summer, the summer of 1919, when all of these race riots broke out, over 30 race riots broke out from coast to coast. She is loosely inspired by Carlotta Bass, who was the first African-American woman to own and operate her own newspaper, the California Eagle, which was launched in 1912, and she served as its editor-in-chief until 1951.
Wow. I know. It's an amazing story by itself.
Many of us know the wonderful legacy of the anti-lynching crusader and suffragist, Ida B. Wells.
And you created these two wonderful women. Is it Ivo? Is that right?
Ivo is the protagonist, and she meets when she goes off to college to pursue a course in typesetting. It never occurs to her that she's going to be a journalist. She has her heart and mind set on being simply setting type at a newspaper, but she crosses paths with her printing instructor, Ona Durden, who's 14 years her senior, and Ona ends up encouraging Ivo to try her hand at writing for the newspaper, and then she eventually becomes the editor-in-chief of the college newspaper, and she and Ona develop a very deep friendship and eventually become lovers, and together they launch the newspaper in Kansas City in 1918.
I mean, is it two very different routes to get at our history and what America's about? I think that I really kind of find so enjoyable. As I was telling you both, I've been reading both your books in tandem, and it's almost as if I could see these two books being taught in tandem, you know? Because one of the things you kind of there's one piece that strikes me about both these books that speak to the Black world and the and women and family and in America, which is family. Because, you know, you can read a lot of books about people enslaved. You read a lot of books in our history about the horrendous things that have happened to the African-American world. But one of the things about the thing that struck me about both these books are, and how can I put this, are positive, mm-hmm. are kind of, and both rooted in the power of family.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday,
right?
I had the privilege to do another radio program with Ms. Tatamy, and she said something so wonderful, and I just want to jog her memory and give her an opportunity to say what
good.
She said yesterday when you made your comment about African-Americans being victimized. Can you quote exactly what you said yesterday? Because I thought it was so beautiful and so important.
So one of the things that, because I'm so interested in portraying our history, and so much of our history is wrapped around dominance and violence and segregation and isolation, and when I write, I am very, very conscious of how my characters will be victimized, but I never allow them to be victims. They always figure a way, they always figure what their place is and how they can not only sustain themselves, but elevate themselves, how they can use the power within them to navigate the system that they find themselves in, how they can protect their families, how important those families are to them, and how they keep hold of those structures that will nourish them. And so it is inevitable, if you're writing about this period, that there will be some victimization. But again, I will not allow these characters, and especially since mine are based, and again, loosely based, mm-hmm. but they are based on real people who did real things and did not allow those circumstances to overcome them, victimized.
And I feel exactly the same way. When Lalita said that yesterday, I thought to myself, well, this is why we're on the same panel. because it's exactly what inspires me. Also, the ingenuity and the cunning and the craftiness and the creativity that was required of my ancestors to not only survive but to live and to thrive. I try to endow each and every one of my characters in Jam on the Vine with those qualities that Lolita just spoke of so beautifully.
And both your characters and situations also, I think, that have to do with kind of internal struggles. Do you know what I mean? I mean whether it's Ivo and the struggle around this newspaper and how the newspaper evolves, which is also her kind of evolving in terms of how you confront race and racism, to the question of what it means to be enslaved and then sold to Creeks, and the kind of, which is very different because it's almost about more about fusion than separation in the end. You know, and as I said, these are very kind of different ways of looking at what America has wrought.
But in order to any good character and any good story is going to involve the characters digging deep to try to figure out what it is that they're going to do in their circumstances. But one of the things that has been important, this is my third book now, and it's very important for me to portray American history.
Mm-hmm.
This really is our history, and it's not the stereotypical history. It's not all whips and chains. It is not just one story we have to tell. We have many, many stories to tell. And the fact that we are not only still standing, but we have managed to elevate ourselves, I think is very important for us to document, for us to put down, and for America to recognize, because we are such a significant part of this country's history.
I completely agree. I think that Lolita and I have a similar fire blazing in our bellies. One of the things that I like to bring to my fiction is a subverting some of the narratives that I know Americans grapple with. So, for example, the ideology that sprung from the study of slave families, this is the idea that African-American men abandon their families. I took on that in my novel, and I have my character, Ennis, who is the father, who is Ivo's father in Jam on the Vine. He leaves Central East Texas, and he heads north. He's trying to find a new community for his family and new work, and he travels to Kansas. And he ends up getting separated by his family, but he's incarcerated. He's incarcerated for stealing water. He doesn't have water rights papers, and he's simply filling buckets, and he's taken to prison in Kansas, and he's separated from his family for 9 years. Because one day I was sitting and I was looking at all of this really painful documentation, interviews with African American women and during the post-Reconstruction era, who talked about fathers and brothers and uncles and male cousins leaving home and never returning. And I thought to myself, that juxtaposed with the unbelievable statistics of lynchings and incarcerations of black men in the South, I thought, you know, I would bet my life on the fact that half, at least half, probably more than half,
mm-hmm.
of those men left home with every inclination to return. But what happens if you get caught up on a road that you shouldn't have been on, and you know what I mean by that, or if you get taken into custody, and of course you would be given no phone call in the 1890s and not given a stamp to send a letter home, then that narrative becomes very different. And so in my story, you see this father leaving, and one of my readers said to me recently, you know, I thought he was doing that thing that all black men do. And I said, well, that's exactly what I'm trying to problematize. And we need to, when we accept our history, when we read, I don't care who's written the book, when we read the history, we have to interrogate the history that we're reading and pose questions.
And we do.
So my character,
right.
He ends up, he serves his time, and he ends up, this is a spoiler, but he ends up being reunited with his family. He's a good man, and he has a lot of pride in being a father and in being a husband, as I'm sure many of my male ancestors that pride in, and sometimes that was thwarted, and I wanted to shine a light on that.
It doesn't spoil it, really, because you have to read this thing to get the feel for it anyway. So to get you to that place. And I encourage people to do that. And Lolita Tatami, I mean, your characters, I was thinking of both your character sets of books. I can feel what happens to their descendants today. I keep thinking about that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing that's remarkable to me. The further back in the past that I reach, the more I feel the present.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
a lot of the issues that we have not faced, and a lot of the issues that are difficult, more than stubborn, that we just, they're just too hard to have honest conversations about. And a lot of this is the legacy of slavery. I would rather spend my time sometimes, I think, writing about happier things, writing about more carefree things. But I think that it's really important to understand how much this country is still struggling with the legacy of slavery, and that's not just black folks. It's everyone is caught in this same web of not being able to look back and trying to forget all of these things happened, and then we stumble right back into the same intractable problems, so that we have a Ferguson, and we have to actually issue a report that just came out.
Right, right.
That said, surprise, surprise, there's actually racism in the police department there.
How right. shocking.
I love that you said surprise, surprise. I love that you said that.
But we have to keep looking back to see where did this come from before we can hope to unravel it or to pound it into submission or to at least make some progress towards honestly facing what our issues are still today.
And you both said this, but I mean, I think that it's the fact that you are both probing parts of history that get to the complexity of the matter. And I think it was you who might have said earlier, Lily, to the Tatami, that it's not just all whips and chains. That there's some the depth and the complexity is if we don't wrap our hands around that as a nation, as a people across the spectrum, it'll never get resolved. It'll never get healed. It'll never change. I think that's part of what you two bring.
We're not just black and white, and everything is monolithic. There's all sorts of gray, and we have to understand and be able to live in the gray. We have to be able to point to the black and the white, but we also have to live in the gray. I think that it's really, really important to have reminders and bodies of work that have complexity and have nuance, and that have different kinds of relationships portrayed, so that we don't get stuck in that one story that we can just shrug off because we've heard it so many times before.
Right. I completely agree with Lolita, and I think that there's a danger in perpetuating the same narrative over and over. I mean, to some extent, black authors have to take responsibility for some of the ideology that's been perpetuated about African-American communities. If you continuously depict yourself as a victim in your literature, in your music, in your films, then how would you expect society to come at you any other way than as a victim, if that is the image that you are perpetrating over and over?
Preach on.
Right. That's it. No, amen to that. I think that is real. I mean, it makes me think of, you know, and I think it's something that in all of society that this creative work can help root out. I think that's what this does collectively after a while, begins to make us think of things we don't think about and begin to help us heal what's inside, you know,
right.
and understand.
Which was one of my main reasons for also creating a lesbian protagonist, because it
right.
occurred to me years ago that one of the ways that society has gotten away with maligning homosexuals in America is by divorcing lesbian and gay people from history.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, it is okay to rescue from obscurity some famous, now not living, gay or lesbian actor from the Broadway era or from Hollywood. But when it comes to possessing a sort of collective knowledge about lesbian or gay activists, journalists, lawyers, all gay people are not in the arts, then the conversation gets very, very quiet. So I thought, you know, it would be a nice reminder for folks to know that lesbian and gay identity is not some modern thing. Now people are talking about it because of the present marriage rights movement that's going on. But, of course, lesbian and gay people have been around forever, since the beginning of time, and yet the stories are not told. They're just not told, and especially in the context of African-American history. So that was intentional on my part.
Mm-hmm.
I was very conscious about making Ivo a lesbian as a sort of subtle reminder that gays and lesbians have always played a part in the infrastructure of this nation.
And also,
have always contributed in every arena you can imagine, and yet those narratives aren't told. And so you can get away with the sort of unspoken homophobic discourse if you perpetuate stories that have eradicated gay and lesbian contribution. You can get away with denying that community rights, because the unspoken truth sort of emerges that, well, they haven't contributed to society anyway. Why should we give them rights? What have they done? And so I wanted to upset that notion.
And you did. And you did with Ivo and Ona. And I think that, you know, I was thinking that and also with the characters that you've given us in Citizens Creek, the father and the daughter, I mean, his brilliance is so important, I think, in the center of this, and her tenacity. You know, the little warrior, as he called her, right?
That's right. And it was important for me. I wanted to also give two points of view. I wanted to do half of the book with a bit of a male sensibility. My protagonist's name is Cow Tom, because he tended the cows. And his granddaughter's name was Rose. But I wanted half of the book to go to the foundation of this ingenious man who bought himself free and rose within tribal politics to become a chief. And then his granddaughter, I wanted to do that from a more female point of view, keeping in mind what the customs of the times were and women's place on the prairie, that kind of thing in Oklahoma. But I think, again, that these are both characters that are outside of the norm. And when I sat down to write my very first book, when I sat down to write Cane River, I actually had a little 3x5 car index card that I put on my bulletin board that I would read every morning before I would start to write. And it was no whips, no chains, because I did not want anyone to have the freedom to hide behind, I don't want to read that, or I've heard all of that before.
Right, another slavery story, another humdrum, down-and-out black tale.
Yeah.
You didn't want people bringing that to your story.
No, and I think that the more that we bring these marginalized voices to the forefront, the better off we'll be. And it just opens minds and hopefully hearts as well.
No, to me, this is the kind of thing that brings history to life. I mean, the creative brings history to a place for us to understand it's a power of the present. Do you know what I mean? I think that that's why books like this, to me, are just so critically important to for people to read and to wrestle with, which I think that the panel, the two of you are going to be on with Elizabeth Alexander, with Linda Duggins moderating, who's a really great mind in her own right, is going to be just extraordinary. I mean, it's just listening to the two of you together on my program. I know that this is going to be...
Yeah, if you add Linda into that, and we have a poet, and, you know, we're going to do it.
Yes, we will.
You are. I mean, and also just very quickly to my listeners here, as you think about getting there on Saturday at 1 o'clock to hear this incredible part of this Women's Literary Festival taking place at the Enoch Pratt Library downtown Baltimore, is just a little background here before we have to go, is Lolita Tatamy. We started out in business, but then she found her heart in the books that she wrote, Cane River and Red River. I've read about but not read, but I'm going to read them now in this latest book, Citizen's Creek. It's wonderfully written. It's just there. You can take it in. LaShonda Catrice Barnett, who's also with us here. This is your first novel, correct?
Yes.
Jam on the Vine. But you've written some other stuff. That means we have to call you to come back on the show to talk about these things. I got Thunder, Black Women Songwriters on Their Craft, and Off the Record Conversations with African American and Brazilian Women Musicians, these are staples for both these things are staples for our program all the time. So I'm looking forward to your other books.
Thank you.
I really am. We've been talking here with Lolita Tatamy and LaShonda Catrice Barnett. You do not want to miss this conversation this Saturday at the Enoch Pratt Library, downtown on Cathedral Street, 1 o'clock, upstairs in the Wheeler Auditorium. Linda Duggins is moderating. They'll be joined by Elizabeth Alexander, but it's going to be, you heard what you've heard today. This is just the tip of what you're going to hear on Saturday, and we look forward to having you both back. And welcome to Baltimore when you get here.
Thank you. And hardly wait.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
You're listening to your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way to break, you're hearing Sweet Home Chicago, this time performed by the Blues Brothers. John Belushi of the Blues Brothers and Saturday Night Live fame left us on this day in 1982. Back to that same old place.